Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. I am Lauren Tenney, and this is the Talk with Tenney show. Today, we are reading part three of the member-initiated task force independent of the American Psychological Association and Division 35's report on Division 35 involvement with PENS and its aftermath. You can get directly to this report and its appendices through the link on the promotion on the Blog Talk Radio, and you can hear the earlier parts one and two reading of this report also through the links on the Blog Talk Radio promo. I'm starting on page 58, section 4, 2015 Hoffman Report and events that followed. The events in this section and the sections that follow clearly relate to Div 35 and need no further explanation. The Hoffman Report was released on July 2, 2015, in anticipation of the EC 35 meeting in Toronto that would take place at the beginning of the APA Annual Convention, August 6 through 10, 2015. Then Div 35 President Maureen McHugh began drafting a response to Hoffman from Div 35, consulting with EC 35 members over the EC 35 only listserv. She asked that EC 35 members read the Hoffman report so that there could be discussion of it both via the listserv and at the upcoming 2015 meeting. Preparation of a division statement in response to the Hoffman report. Past President McHugh reported in an interview and follow-up email to the MITF that when she was still president, she had received multiple correspondences from Division 35 members saying that Div 35 needed to write a response to the Hoffman report and that the EC 35 listserv wasn't the right place to hold the discussion. Then President-elect Garrett Akinsanya agreed that there should be a space open to members, too, for discussion. Given it would be difficult to begin an entirely new listserv, McHugh worked with Keith Cook, who suggested she open the Women of Color WOC Leaders Listserv in order to work with EC 35 members to develop a response. Individuals started making suggestions for the response and sending documents and drafts from other divisions via the listserv, which she used to work on the response using statements from other divisions and PsychSR. McHugh then posted a draft on the listserv for feedback and discussion, reported that people responded to it, and that she then made changes based on feedback. There was discussion about the opening statement and the use of the word, quote, valid or, quote, unbiased. After several suggestions, someone suggested, quote, fair, and an unofficial vote on the word fair was supported by consensus. McHugh notes that Moorhead Slaughter was among those who voted for the use of the word fair to describe the Hoffman Report. McHugh told us that very late in the process, President-elect Garrett Akinsanya suggested a series of wording changes that changed the entire meaning of the document, including the wording around fair, and in the end, expressed anger to McHugh that her changes had not been incorporated. McHugh noted that Garrett Akinsanya indicated to her that she had not subscribed to the WOC listserv and so had not followed the comments of the members and so didn't realize that the statement was collaborative. According to McHugh, McHugh put the discussion of the statement on the EC 35 Toronto agenda, but there was no discussion of it there. That may have been because the discussion about the Moorhead Slaughter presidency took up the majority of time at that meeting. To summarize the response statement to the Hoffman Report, Div 35, 1, accepts the Hoffman Report as, quote, thorough and fair. 2, is, quote, ashamed that as, quote, the result of APA's failure of leadership and our own may have contributed to the torture of those held in detention by the U.S. government, end quote. 3, condemns the ethical violations of APA leaders, staff, and members involved and demands public accountability from all those involved in order to regain public trust. 4, acknowledges our failure in 2007 to join with other groups opposing the composition and process of Penn's task force. 5, regrets not taking an early principled stand demanding APA uphold international standards, e.g. Geneva Convention and UN Convention Against Torture, to enforce ethical policy. 6, acknowledges and apologizes for issuing a separate statement in 2012 that appeared to contradict CISR and DSJ's statement affirming safety, justice, and well-being of all people. 7, pledges to contribute to bringing members and psychologists into a process of serious redemptive self-reflection in order to take necessary steps to build a more conscious, compassionate organization. 8, stands with other concerned psychologists committed to reforming APA to ensure transparent and democratic process and to do all we can to reduce the possibility that such events will ever occur in the future. And 9, affirmed that as feminists and a social justice division, we confirm the importance of human dignity and well-being and of addressing human rights violations. See Appendix K for the full statement. Division 35 Executive Committee, EC 35 meeting in Toronto. Before the Toronto EC 35 meeting, which occurred Thursday night at the APA annual convention, Olivia Moorhead Slaughter had told McHugh that she wanted to address the group. Moorhead Slaughter was president-elect of Div 35 and was named in the Hoffman Report. As such, people on the listserv wanted to hear from her. She had planned on attending the meeting, but a family issue kept her in Boston, and although expensive and logistically complicated, according to McHugh, she arranged to have Moorhead Slaughter on speakerphone to address the EC 35. She read a prepared statement over speakerphone. See Appendix L. In terms of her background in Div 35, Moorhead Slaughter had been elected unopposed in the spring of 2015 as Div 35 president-elect. Previously, she had served as co-chair of the Hyde Graduate Student Research Award in 2010, first joining the EC 35 in 2010 during Thelma Bryant Davis's presidency. She was then also appointed in summer 2013 to a special task position on the National Multicultural Summit Legacy Fund Committee. She continued co-chairing the Hyde Award Committee through spring 2015 and the NMCS Legacy Fund as well, when she was announced to be running for president-elect and was later congratulated for being elected president-elect for 2015-16 in the summer 2015 newsletter. McHugh created space on the agenda for Moorhead Slaughter to address EC 35 and for EC 35 members to ask Moorhead Slaughter questions about her involvement relative to information in the Hoffman Report. Her statement is captured in the minutes of the meeting, published in the Div 35 newsletter, The Feminist Psychologist, TFP, published online, winter 2015. See also McHugh's past president report in the fall 2015 issue of TFP and in Appendix K and M. During the speakerphone conversation, Div 35 members asked Moorhead Slaughter questions about her involvement and her accountability for such involvement. At the end of the phone call, Moorhead Slaughter stated she, quote, will respectfully accept the EC's decision about that, e.g., whether Div 35 could move forward effectively given her role as Penn's task force chair in light of the Hoffman Report findings. And she thinks it has to ultimately be about what's best for Div 35, end quote. See TFP, Winter 2015, page 58. After Moorhead Slaughter's phone call ended, there was a lengthy discussion facilitated by McHugh around two issues. A, the response from Div 35 regarding the Hoffman Report, and B, decisions around Moorhead Slaughter as the incoming president-elect. McHugh posed the question of which item to discuss first, and it was determined that Moorhead Slaughter as president-elect should be discussed first. This discussion revolved around whether Div 35 could and should ask her to resign, which took up the remainder of the meeting. From our perspective, Div 35 members on both sides expressed a variety of opinions in tones, ranging from reasonable argumentation to impassioned, sometimes extremely angry, outbursts. Those representing the opinion that Morehead Slaughter should not be asked to resign expressed a number of views summarized in the minutes of the meeting in Appendix M. A sample of such views include: A, some felt that they themselves might have acted the same way had they been placed in her position relative to the Penn's task force process and its aftermath. B, that one should not pass judgment on a person if one hasn't read the entire Hoffman report. C, that Morehead Slaughter was being made a scapegoat, as often happens to members of minority groups. And D, that she was duped and misled and thus had less accountability for that reason. TFP Winter 2016, page 59. Two members recalled an individual asking whether EC-35 was, quote, throwing a sister under the bus. Those representing the view that Morehead Slaughter should resign expressed a number of views summarized in the minutes of the meeting in Appendix M. A sample of such views include: A, she had many opportunities to stop supporting the Penn's task force process since its report had been released, yet she failed to do so. B, that Div 35 needs to attend to the racism toward people of color who have been targeted in the war on terror, but she would have a conflict of interest in leading the division in this case. C, she would have a further conflict of interest during Div 35's efforts to contribute to policy changes in APA after Hoffman. And D, that her answers to questions during the phone call at this meeting did not demonstrate taking personal accountability for her part in the Penn's task force process and beyond. Others also spoke of Div 35 history with regard to supporting the Penn's task force process and not supporting the dissidents, and that Morehead Slaughter could not be expected to easily lead Div 35 in reversing course given her own involvement. It should be noted here that members on both sides of the issue reaffirmed that Div 35 does not and has never supported torture. Members on both sides of the issue began to talk about reparations, e.g. making donations to families of those who suffered abuse and interrogations. Multiple additional viewpoints were also summarized in the Div 35 meeting minutes as key themes that emerged from a qualitative analysis of the notes taken by the Secretary. A, voting approach, role of the EC-35 regarding removal of an elected official. B, concern about the meeting's process and whether it was a feminist process. C, concern regarding Morehead Slaughter's ability to be an effective leader post-Hoffman. D, discussion of what is best for Div 35 in terms of credibility and or loss of membership. E, concern relating to Div 35 stance vis-a-vis the DSJ. F, concerns relating to Div 35's overall position and perspective on torture. And G, comments on supporting Morehead Slaughter and not scapegoating her. As the meeting drew to a close, McHugh asked the room if there should be a vote. Those who were familiar with the bylaws said that there was no bylaws language permitting removal of an officer. The idea of taking a vote of, quote, no confidence was discussed. McHugh's past president report published in the fall of 2015, Appendix M, stated, quote, most did not want a vote of no confidence per se, but wanted to express their concerns about Olivia's leadership. A motion was made for attendees to vote anonymously on the following, quote, I have serious concerns about Olivia assuming leadership of Division 35 at this time, end quote. Then, this is still within the quote, then President Maureen McHugh asked attendees if this should be a vote by only the EC or elected EC or all attendees. While there was not a consensus, the majority of the group supported the decision to have all attendees vote with the anonymous ballot. EC members wrote their votes on a piece of paper turned into and counted by the Secretary Monique Clinton-Sharad and by Susan Basso in the meeting hall. This anonymous vote resulted in 30 to 41 indicating yes, they had serious concerns, 5 of 41 indicated no serious concerns, and 6 of 41 abstained. On Friday, August 7th, Maureen conveyed the results of this ballot to Olivia by phone, end quote. At the same meeting, McHugh also presented a draft of a Div 35 response to the Hoffman report to those present and stated that she would also electronically post the draft on the EC 35 listserv for comments after the meeting. See Appendix K for final version of this document. This concluded the meeting, and Dr. Garrett Akinsanya became president of Div 35, with McHugh as past president and Olivia Moorhead Slaughter as president-elect. Div 35 and other listservs. To help in understanding of events that followed, a summary of listservs is presented here. Email list for elected members of EC 35. We had no access to this. EC 35 listserv, listserv of the Div 35 extended EC. WOC listserv, which was originally a listserv for women of color in Div 35, but was opened up to all members to create a town hall type of discussion format to address Hoffman. Town hall listserv, which was Garrett Akinsanya initiated on October 26, 2015, to replace the WOC listserv and call for greater membership participation and discussion. And the Power L listserv, independent of Div 35, that has served for many years as a listserv for any feminist psychologist belonging to Association for Women in Psychology, APA's Div 35, or neither. Events that led to the formation of the Division 35 member-initiated task force and in response to internal division protests. Letters for and against Moorhead Slaughter resignation or removal as Div 35 president-elect. In the month that followed the 2015 APA convention, several members wrote strong letters to the Div 35 listserv arguing that Moorhead Slaughter should resign. There were two main foci of the email. A, whether Moorhead Slaughter should resign, and B, whether the EC 35 meeting, the 2015 meeting in Toronto, that resulted in the vote that led, that was led via, quote, feminist process, loosely defined as ensuring all voices were heard. The events unfolded as follows. Maureen McHugh posted a report of the EC 35 meeting in Toronto. See also TFP newsletter, fall 2015. Next, Bravada Garrett Akinsanya, president of Div 35 at the time, responded to McHugh's statement saying, in order to create a dialogue comprised of balanced perspectives, with each of the author's permission, I will be forwarding a series of letters regarding Dr. Moorhead Slaughter that I have been receiving for the last 2 weeks. End quote. Garrett Akinsanya post to EC 35 listserv, August 31st, 2015. Garrett Akinsanya then posted a series of letters supporting Moorhead Slaughter and criticizing McHugh's approach to chairing the EC 35 meeting in Toronto. Despite the stated goal to add balance to the conversation, the letters that Garrett Akinsanya posted on August 31, 2015 were all supportive of Moorhead Slaughter remaining as incoming president-elect, and none were opposed. These supportive letters were written by Melba Vasquez, Julie Green, and Wendy Peters of Div 35, Section 6, Wendy Williams, Div 35 president of Section 1, and former Div 35 president Karen White. Dr. Garrett Akinsanya distributed these letters in several separate emails, each with PDF attachments of the letters on official letterhead. As can be seen on the listserv, people had strong reactions to this event. In response, many more people posted statements themselves or sent letters directly to Garrett Akinsanya. In email exchanges on Div 35 listserv and Power L, in response to protests related to transparency and balance, i.e., making available letters from multiple perspectives and not just those supportive of Moorhead Slaughter, Garrett Akinsanya made statements suggesting that other documents sent directly to her would be posted to our webpage. She stated that others who disagree with her and other supporters of Moorhead Slaughter's remaining in office should submit their own documents in, quote, letter form for her to her for posting. But Garrett Akinsanya never made these letters public by posting them on the website as promised, and thus the membership remained uninformed. At this point, the voting members of EC 35 had met with Moorhead Slaughter. The statement from Moorhead Slaughter about remaining in her position was posted by Keith Cook on the Women of Color listserv on September 2nd, 2015. In a letter dated September 2, 2015 and posted on September 3, 2015, Garrett Akinsanya described her process in determining next steps. Garrett Akinsanya stated that she discussed the situation with APA counsel and held a meeting with only the voting EC35 members and Morehead Slaughter, quote, to openly discuss our group's concerns, our leadership options, and forward progress, end quote. Garrett Akinsanya reported that Morehead Slaughter told the group she intended to remain as Div 35 president-elect. The voting EC35 members then discussed how to, quote, develop a transparent, open, and explicit strategic process that integrates and legitimizes divergent opinions in an effort to find solutions and create change, end quote. Garrett Akinsanya stated that there was a need to, quote, pay great attention to those who have expressed legitimate concerns about Dr. Morehead Slaughter, APA, and our division, end quote, and said that, quote, Dr. Maureen McHugh's letter and Dr. Sharon Lamb's letter were both instrumental in determining how we may proceed in identifying and addressing our members' key concerns, end quote. Two members, Garrett Akinsanya wrote, had agreed to perform a content analysis of the feedback from the August 2015 EC35 meeting so that there might be a, quote, data-driven process. Garrett Akinsanya also made the decision to schedule a series of webinars on social justice topics and to include discussion of the Hoffman Report, and she ended her letter by stating that the voting EC35 agreed it would be helpful to meet with APA attorneys to explore creating a bylaw change that supported a, quote, feminist conflict mediation process, end quote, and a way to address issues like the one before them without creating, quote, legal exposure in the future. Div 35 Listserv Communications. Approximately 10 days later, on Saturday, September 12th, Lamb revised her original letter and submitted it on letterhead to the listservs EC35 and WOC, as that appeared to be the new process for submitting statements at the time. Several other letters advocating for Morehead Slaughter to step down as president-elect or be removed by the EC35 were posted on the EC35 and WOC listservs. The authors were Cheryl Travis, Kelly Von Johnson, Jean Marek, Mindy Urchell, Sarah E. Ullman, and Laura Baum. Emily Keener wrote a letter asking Morehead Slaughter for greater accountability. She sent this letter directly to Garrett Akinsanya and also to Morehead Slaughter with the request that the letter be made public in the same way Garrett Akinsanya had made public letters she had received in support of Morehead Slaughter's presidency. This did not happen. Later, after the first, quote, lunch counter conversation, Keener posted this same letter to the listservs. During this period, there were also repeated requests from members in informal letters and on the non-EC35 listserv, PowerL, requesting that documents and letters on both sides of the Morehead Slaughter issue be made available to the general membership. However, in spite of the desire for transparency that she expressed in her September 2, 2015 letter, this never happened. Documents submitted to the Div 35 president were never made public on the listserv or website, including a group of letters sent by many past presidents of Div 35, despite the promise of openness. The situation resulted in an emotional debate on the listserv, and many emails on all sides of the issues were sent. Exchanges included requests for more information, accountability, and transparency about Morehead Slaughter, debates about varying definitions of feminist process, and questions about what types of statements, questions, and probes are considered, quote, disrespectful and, quote, racist within an open Div 35 listserv format. At the peak of the tension on the listservs, other mechanisms for more productive debate were also discussed. Some individuals proposed waiting until the upcoming midwinter EC35 meeting in January of 2016 in New Orleans to discuss the issue face-to-face. Some worried that all Div 35 members, not just the EC35 members or those with personal funds to travel to New Orleans meeting, needed to be part of the conversation. Div 35 lunch counter conversations. The lunch counter conversations described in the September 2nd, 2015 letter by Garrett Akinsanya began and were held through webinar conference calls. These were part of Garrett Akinsanya's efforts, along with the town hall listserv, to bring Div 35 members who were not on the EC 35 into the dialogue about Hoffman and as part of her presidential agenda to include open discussions about race. Once begun, these conversations were controlled, in our perception, by selectively choosing people to lead the discussions who supported her position. The invited speakers were, as some perceived, APA insiders presenting only one side of an issue. This was especially true for the second conversation. Although anyone who attended was permitted space to speak, the specific lunch counter conversation that was meant to be a discussion of Hoffman was co-led by Moorhead Slaughter and Garrett Akinsanya. The conversation amongst division members often centered on racism and feminist processes without connecting those issues directly to the crisis of the Hoffman Report and impeding presidency of Moorhead Slaughter. As some Div 35 members became frustrated with this mode of communication and the efforts to control the conversation, posts to the listserv on topics related to abuse of power, the Hoffman Report, conflict of interest, and Moorhead Slaughter occurred more frequently. Div 35 listserv, quote, tone and calls for strict moderation. Over the month of December 2015, President Garrett Akinsanya, perhaps speaking on behalf of the voting EC, decided that the listserv needed greater moderation. Much discussion ensued regarding, quote, respectful disagreement and, quote, censorship. People made claims of censorship when their emails weren't showing up on the listserv, and even a past president was removed from the EC 35 listserv after posting comments critical of the current leadership, which were constructed as racist by some on the basis that a black president was receiving more criticism than any prior white president of Div 35. Criticism was construed by some as a form of disrespect. After it was made clear the poster who was removed from the listserv was indeed a past president, she was added back to the EC listserv. All past presidents have a right to be on this listserv. Over time, it was revealed that rather than using the term, quote, moderation to mean watching the emails for violations of APA listserv rules, the president was being sent the emails to read and manually approve each individual email for posting. Sharon Lamb accused Garrett Akinsanya of censorship, and Garrett Akinsanya invited Lamb into a conversation with Keith Cook, the APA staff person who is in charge of listserv communication. As it was revealed in this conversation, the mechanism President Garrett Akinsanya was using to moderate the listserv was a difficult, older one, and it became clear that Garrett Akinsanya had thought she was permitting almost all of the emails to be posted when actually she wasn't approving most of them. Thus, the problems in her understanding the antiquated system may have exacerbated critics' attributions of, quote, censorship. After this conversation, she then dropped the listserv monitoring mechanism. Formation of the Div 35 Member-Initiated Task Force, MITF. Around mid-December, after the Toronto meeting, those who had been emailing about Dr. Moorhead Slaughter's continued service or about what appeared to them as listserv censorship and lack of discussion about next steps after Hoffman began discussing other courses of action. After reading Hoffman and learning of the MITF formed by Div 48, members in 2012, Dr. Sharon Lamb and Dr. Sarah E. Ullman communicated with and invited others to join with them in creating a member-initiated task force to examine Division 35's participation in the PENS process and its aftermath. The Div 35 response to Hoffman was a, quote, pledge to contribute to the process of bringing our members and the large and diverse community of psychologists together to engage in serious and redemptive self-reflection and to take necessary steps to rebuild a more conscious and compassionate organization, end quote. To that end, they gathered feedback about this idea through a growing email list of members who were concerned about Div 35, and they shared with these members their thoughts regarding a task force. They announced the task force on December 23rd, see Appendix N. In announcing this task force on several listservs, a number of supporters contacted them, willing to either serve on the task force or lend support in a variety of ways. The task force met online and divided tasks. Continued abuse of power before midwinter meeting. The task force was announced on December 23, 2015. Shortly after, there was controversy regarding op-ed pieces that Division 35 members had written for the fall newsletter. Sharon Lamb and Rakshanda Saleem, 2015, had written an article called, quote, Global Racism of Division 35. Sarah E. Ullman wrote an article entitled, quote, Why Such Silence in Division 35 and How Can We Move Forward? And Kelly Von Johnson, 2015, wrote an article entitled, quote, Open Call, Transparency and Accountability Database, Division 35 Discussion, President-Elect Debate, and the Hoffman Independent Review Report. Von Johnson was concerned that the division president had never followed through in publishing or posting all the letters, pro and con, regarding Morehead Slaughter's presidency. As a historian, this was very important to her. These three articles were published online December 21st, 2016, and appeared in a print version of the newsletter sent to all members mid-January, except Ullman's piece, which was omitted erroneously from the print version. See Appendix O. These three articles are presumed to be the start of a rumor that we have evidence of at least one Div 35 leader, Jean Lao Chin, spreading. This is the rumor that there was a NAACP complaint filed against APA because of the letters. The MITF investigated this rumor and received an email from current APA President Susan McDaniel stating there was no NAACP complaint received. In January of 2016, the two newsletter editors, Emily Keener and Claire Mehta, received a hostile and what they called, quote, intimidating letter from APA attorney Jesse Rabin regarding the choice to publish these three articles, incorrectly stating that they were not following the bylaws in doing so. Rabin stated that all future issues of the newsletter would require EC 35 approval before publication. Given the hostile nature of the letter and continued efforts at what seemed to them like censorship, the editors resigned from their positions and hired a lawyer to defend their actions in a response letter to APA. These articles appear in Appendix P. The acts of the newsletter editors seemed directly related to the Div 35 response to Hoffman. The Society for Psychology of Women pledges to contribute to the process of bringing our members and the large, diverse community of psychologists together to engage in serious and redemptive self-reflection and to take necessary steps to rebuild a more conscious and compassionate organization. Although not responding to a request to be interviewed, President-elect Olivia Morehead Slaughter may have expressed tacit approval for this MITF endeavor in her 2015 letter to Div 35. See Appendix L for all of Morehead Slaughter's statements. Quote, My individual accountability is certainly necessary, but it is not sufficient. Div 35 will not fully heal without a thorough examination of its own actions and inactions over the past decade. It will take courage to face these past decisions with honesty and to withstand the convenience of displacement. I am willing to accept responsibility for my decisions and hope that Div 35 will be willing to do the same. Division 35 Executive Committee Meeting Midwinter 2016, New Orleans. 2015. Around this time, President Garrett Akinsanya asked Lamb to be prepared to update the EC 35 regarding the MITF report and to assist in the preparation of the midwinter meeting by being on a planning committee led by Sharon Jenkins. Garrett Akinsanya consulted Lamb as co-chair of the MITF in regarding to how much time should be devoted to Hoffman, who should lead the discussion, and what kinds of accountability should be discussed. Lamb, in conversation with Garrett Akinsanya, first approved the leaders she was hiring, but later expressed doubt in a personal phone call and later again in the planning meetings, stated that it was not the best choice to bring in, quote, insiders from APA to lead us in discussion. Lamb discovered that both of the contracted leaders, Rosie Bingham and Patricia Arrendado, had signed the Vasquez letter in support of Colonel Larry James in 2007, and she brought this up as a conflict of interest in their leading the discussion on Hoffman. The rest of the committee appeared to understand, quote, conflict of interest to mean, quote, bias, and one person pointed out that Lamb also had biases. Lamb reported to the MITF throughout the process, and their suggestions informed her participation in the planning. Once it was clear that she was not comfortable with the decisions of the committee, she left the committee after attending 3 of the 5 meetings. In preparation for the midwinter meeting, President Garrett Akinsanya also brought together individuals called the Committee on Technology to write new guidelines of netiquette for the listservs. Attempts to discuss earlier drafts were met with hostile requests to wait for the final version. What appeared to be the final version, a version approved by the Committee on Technology, was presented with very short notice, 3 days before the midwinter meeting, to the EC35 for an expected vote at the EC35 midwinter meeting, with no possibility for discussion by membership. Those supporting the MITF saw the suggested changes as part of a move to censor disagreement and to label disagreement, quote, disrespectful. The members at the meeting voted 26 to 11 with 2 abstentions to support changes regarding these rules. Also at the midwinter meeting, President-elect Olivia Morehead Slaughter presented a statement about her accountability and her intention not to resign. This statement wrongly claims that she was now working with Arrigo on a, quote, joint project. Arrigo was contacted and immediately wrote to Dr. Morehead Slaughter to correct her misunderstanding. She had asked if Morehead Slaughter would contribute testimony to a project that examined people who had been duped by institutions and powerful people within them. Essentially, she was asked to help fill in the historical record with information regarding mechanisms underlying the Pens debacle in the APA Pens debate collection, but not co-lead a, quote, joint project, as Morehead Slaughter wrote. The Hoffman discussion at the midwinter meeting brought forth strong feelings about Div 35, Morehead Slaughter's participation, and torture. At the same time, there were equally strong calls for harmony, moving on, and forgiveness. There was no resolution to the issues regarding Hoffman, and only a sharing of what each small group breakout discussion table had considered. Section 5, Analysis. Div 35 as a whole needs to look at accountability at 5 different time periods in its recent history. A, immediately after the 9/11 national emergency, when Div 35 failed to support efforts of the PEPT, the Psychological Effects of Efforts to Prevent Terrorism Task Force. Division 35 members Unger and Lott attempted to gain Div 35 support and were not successful in their attempts. B, during the time that both torture and abusive interrogations were increasingly being covered in the press, where psychologists' involvement in these actions came to light, resulting in the formation of the Pens Task Force and its aftermath, and Div 35 as a whole failed to address these issues in an effective way. C. During the time when the 2006 moratorium resolution banning psychologists' participation in cruel and inhuman treatment was circulating, which is also a time when Melba Vasquez collected support for Larry James in a widely circulated letter and also implied that the dissidents were racist. D. The 2011 meeting in which EC35 did not support the petition and wrote its own statement instead. And E. The 2015-16 meetings when EC35 deliberated about how to handle the dilemma of Olivia Morehead Slaughter as Division 35 president-elect. Below are 10 analytical points with potential solutions and recommendations. A full set of recommendations appear at the end of the accountability section that follows this section. A. Not coming in early enough, the PEPT task force process. As noted in earlier sections, two Division 35 members and past presidents, Lott and Unger, were members of the PEPT Task Force, the task force that preceded the PENS Task Force. The PEPT Task Force issued a report as a result of their research and deliberations that dealt with the psychological effects on U.S. citizens as a result of the, quote, war on terror post-9/11. In 2004, APA members at high levels, staff, COR, and BOD, acted to block the report from becoming an official APA document, and some of the authors then went on to seek outside publishing venues, resulting in the 2006 book entitled, quote, Collateral Damage. There is no evidence that Div 35 membership or members of EC 35 made any effort to have the report accepted by APA. It appears that Div 35 remained silent throughout this period and missed an opportunity to take a measured and informed response to the effects of the, quote, war on terror. Once, quote, Collateral Damage was published in 2006, both Lott and Unger stated that the existence of the book created even more pressure on Stephen Behnke, APA ethics director at the time, to somehow address the increasing press coverage of torture and, quote, enhanced interrogation activities in which documented assertions of psychologist involvement was becoming the norm. Both Lott and Unger believed the release of the book in conjunction with increased press coverage led to APA holding the mini-convention to address the issues. Within the time frame of the APA 2007 annual convention in San Francisco, the mini-convention was also convened that dealt with many of the issues raised by the PEPT Task Force report and the book that followed. Unger had gone to the EC 35 meeting prior to the mini convention and requested that Div 35 support this effort publicly and perhaps also donate convention hours to the topic. Unger reported that another Div 35 member, Laura Brown, was influential in arguing that the dissident's position was anti-military and that Div 35 should not support such efforts. Thus, even when advocated for by two Div 35 past presidents, EC 35 chose not to lend any official or unofficial support to these efforts. Solutions. As Div 35 members, Lott and Unger should be applauded for their work on the PEPT Task Force and their efforts to obtain Div 35 support for the PEPT Task Force report. However, given the events noted above, feminists within Div 35 failed to recognize or act upon the seriousness of torture-related problems, both globally and more locally within the APA proper, even after such problems were brought to Div 35's attention by two past presidents, while simultaneously the media was saturated with torture-related coverage. B. A lack of feminist analysis on militarism and imperialism. From roughly 2002 to the present, evidence of activities such as waterboarding and other, quote, enhanced interrogation efforts have increasingly come to light in press coverage, books, government reports, and other documents. As the evidence is clear, the U.S. government engaged in torture and psychologists were involved in some of these actions. See Appendix B. As the evidence emerged, Div 35 did not take a formal or informal stand on its own that clearly condemned such actions and that banned psychologist involvement. Instead, Div 35 did not take a stand at important junctures and actively worked against APA's taking an important stand against torture. Even when, in 2012, a process for taking stands was developed, Div 35 did not take a stand to support annulment of the PENS report, but chose the language of, quote, rescinding in a separate statement. Rescind means that it would no longer be policy, whereas annulment meant it was never legitimate in the first place. This stance was perceived as non-supportive and weak by those who put forth the petition. Feminists from the Global South, like Chandra Mahanty, 2003A, 2003B, Gaitari Spivak, 1988, and Arundhati Roy, 2014, have critiqued Western feminists for their failure to conduct a feminist power analysis that incorporates a critique of imperialism and colonialism. They have pointed out that to Western feminists, people of color from the global south, e.g. countries within the Arabian Peninsula, Persian territories, North and South Africa, parts of Asia and Central and South America, are invisible. These critics have also shown that Western feminists neglect the role of state-sanctioned violence against communities of color in the global south, and thus miss the opportunity to connect this violence to state violence against other communities of color in the U.S. Unfortunately, such failures in feminist power analyses unwittingly lend support to U.S. imperialistic and militaristic aggressions disguised as feminist or other, quote, social justice causes. Failing to conduct this kind of feminist power analysis resulted in some members of Div 35 accepting explanations about interrogations that they received from those affiliated with the DOD, other government agencies, and APA. They failed to be on high alert and therefore failed in due diligence. Solutions. A clear and principled anti-war and anti-imperialist feminist power analysis could have guided feminists within Div 35 toward clearly stating opposition to the, quote, war on terror and avoiding lending support to U.S. militarism. We call upon Div 35 to unequivocally carry out this analysis now. C. Problem of personal power of high-level division members. One issue that became apparent to us in our feminist analysis of events is the personal power of certain high-level Div 35 leaders. Those women who have provided leadership, service, and scholarship to Div 35 seem to be uncritically trusted to be on the right side of social justice issues. It is clear that Melba Vasquez had that kind of authority, so much so that almost all of the people we interviewed who had signed the Larry James support letter reported that they had signed it because they trusted Vasquez, Laura Brown summarizing it thus, quote, "I would have signed anything Melba Vasquez put in front of me," end quote. Certainly, everyone has a personal responsibility to make their own decisions and consider all sides of any issue, but practically speaking, everyone counts on people they trust to provide them with an accurate and informed reading of the issues. As Melba Vasquez said to Sharon Lamb and Rakshanda Saleem at the 2016 EC midwinter meeting, her decision was based on limited information in a context in which people of color had been fighting a long, hard battle against racism and sexism in APA. She stated, quote, "You have to understand the visuals. Here was a woman and an African-American man who," quote, end quote, "who were being condemned." And as Laura Brown pointed out in her interview, the three individuals doing the condemning were white men. Unfortunately, treating individuals from a marginalized group with a liberal, quote, protectiveness could have led to not wanting to investigate them or explore alternative interpretations of their actions. But it is also a way to, quote, other them. While it appears supportive, it can be demeaning and detrimental to establishing equality. Solutions. In institutions that are historically racist and sexist, it may be difficult for women and people of color to give women and people of color a thorough vetting before assuming their innocence or assuming that they are being targeted and coming to their aid, for certainly sexism and racism could play a part in reactions against them. Second, those with professional, personal, and charismatic power need to be more careful and thorough before bringing others to their side of an issue, understanding that loyalty to them, or fear of their disapproval, might co-opt individuals' choices. Moreover, given certain leaders in APA have come to represent certain divisions, they need to either state directly in their public messaging that they are acting alone and not representing Div 35, or they need to consult Div 35's membership. Also, power shifts more easily when there are not long-term, deeply embedded relationships. In matters that engage the national security sector, Div 35 members should understand that people in, quote, protected classes can be deliberately chosen for leadership roles to thwart public criticism. Those within Div 35 who have been leaders within APA or Div 35 and either A, took action that was directly related to the PENS task force process before, during, and after, or B, failed to take action such that their passivity bolstered its viability, should concretely and publicly take responsibility for those actions or inactions. Taking responsibility may include a personal accounting of actions they took or failed to take. It may include a post hoc analysis of what they could have done differently to affect a different outcome. It could also include an analysis of how Div 35 or APA structures contributed to their failings and lead them to a principled confrontation of policies and procedures, activities that have contributed to compromises and conflicts of interest. We also believe that more frequent turnover on the EC 35 is needed, including term limits for positions and reappointment limitations, and that there needs to be restrictions in place to prevent, quote, division shopping for new leadership positions and conflict of interest statements. The, quote, old girl network that is developed has crowded out, quote, new girls and reproduced problematic structures that have always undergirded, quote, old boy networks. We suggest that Div 35 reassess its priorities and reprioritize the mission of, quote, advancing feminist psychology over mostly, quote, advancing women psychologists. D, invoking racism and using the language of racism and sisterhood to unite feminists in solidarity and condemn outsiders. Solidarity with regard to sisterhood and anti-racism efforts has been an important and is not to be underestimated in the advancement of women of color in APA. But the specter of racism can be called upon without sufficient analysis in order to stir up instant solidarity. That is what happened with the 2007 letter in support of James and the current support of Moorhead Slaughter remaining in office. Calls of racism cannot be used to block any criticism of a person of color, and Div 35 has a special obligation to use such language ethically to unite feminists, as well as to lead APA in evaluating their diversity policies. Some Div 35 women of color and their white allies have framed calls for Moorhead Slaughter's resignation as racist. One argument that has been made on a public listserv is that Moorhead Slaughter is being condemned more than or instead of the white men who had more direct involvement with Penn's task force. While true with respect to APA more broadly, this argument ignores the fact that no white men named in Hoffman hold a position of power within Div 35. It also ignores the fact that it would be difficult or impossible for Div 35 to contribute to the efforts of others to reform APA, including, quote, condemning others named in the Hoffman report, while ignoring Moorhead Slaughter's role as Penn's task force chair, and with her as president-elect of the division. There appears to be difficulty separating out long-held grievances regarding experiences of racism by some women of color within Div 35, from the roles some individuals played in the Penn's task force and its aftermath. It may be that because of racism in Div 35, there is a feeling that these events cannot be separated. Solutions. Div 35 now is in a unique and powerful position to explore and evaluate how APA supports, advances, and uses some people of color and women who have aspirations to rise in APA governance. See the next section. Div 35 should hold workshops for Div 35 elected leaders and the EC in feminist analysis with education that shows feminism as more than simply, quote, supporting women and, quote, promoting women in leadership. With such training, they could be well primed as activists within the entire organization and, most importantly, able to understand how to work within the system and when to step outside of it. That is, they would be able to represent women and minorities and fight against social injustices rather than supporting alliances or the status quo in order to advance women or keep their own positions. Relatedly, when others have complaints, criticism, or a different analysis than one's own, it is important to view the issue from multiple perspectives and to not only assume that bias may be at play. Even if racism could be involved, it is important to consider additional aspects of the situation, along with race, as more than one factor is likely to be contributing the problem or conflict. E. Uncritical solidarity and, quote, cheerful diversity. We note again here the use of people of color as not only supporters of the views of white men, but as shields for white men's views, proposals, and acts. We believe that people of color have been used in some cases knowingly from communal or self-serving reasons, and in other cases unwittingly. And we write this understanding that this has been true for white women and other historically marginalized groups as well. This limited form of inclusion does not challenge public power structures, but rather contributes to a cheerful, non-threatening appearance of diversity that ultimately serves maintaining existing structures of power. As Zoe Zamaduzi states, 2016, quote, diversity signifies the inclusion of communities on the margins in ways that do not dissenter dominance, but actually insulate it. The inclusion of marginalized identities and experiences without decentering dominant narratives is an understanding of diversity that leaves oppressive structures intact and, in fact, insulates them from criticism. End quote. We see an example of this in Moorhead Slaughter's role on Penn's task force as chair. When she chose to send out Behnke's letters to the Penn's task force, the state boards, and to COR. Also, we see Larry James propped up at COR in a last-minute position on COR to represent Banks and Behnke's positions. These are two examples of such roles filled by people of color to represent views written by someone behind the scenes with ties to the military. Giving voice and prominence to people of color can be seen as a way of giving people of color power or a path toward power, which, given the overrepresentation of white, especially men, in power positions, is needed. Who could argue against that? But for political maneuvers, it signals to critics to be more careful and to take race into consideration before providing criticism or speaking against the person of color. It may be that people of color understand these dynamics from years of experience with racism, difficulties in advancement, and difficulties gaining access to positions of power, and realize that sometimes advancement comes at the cost of not threatening the status quo. White women have experienced similar dynamics trying to gain access to power in organizations controlled by men. Thus, a critical analysis of these dynamics and skill at undermining them while still coming to power would be an important discussion for Div 35. Moreover, Div 35 espouses an interest in, quote, intersectionality, but appears to use the term in a way Crenshaw in 1991 and others other founding mothers may not have intended. Crenshaw wrote that one important use of the term intersectionality was to examine intra-group oppressions and marginalizations that identity politics do not allow. The differences within group based on identity, privilege, and oppression are thus important differences. That is, we, as members of Div 35 and APA generally, need to be mindful of the differences within groups of people when advancing others to power. Solutions. We do not deny that racism is an issue within APA, but also want to shine light on our belief that it was racism in the form of tokenism that in part influenced the appointment of Dr. Moorhead Slaughter as chair of the Penn's task force. We also want to underscore our belief that all people involved with the Penn's task force who remained defenders of the task force report, even after the dissenters spoke out, must not remain in positions of power within APA and Division 35. Div 35 needs to address the racism of the past while also addressing our part in the post-Penn's process. We recommend an honest accounting of any practices that were or seemed racist, holding accountable former leaders or members in Div 35 in the kind of practice advocated today as, quote, calling in, as opposed to, quote, calling out. White women in Div 35 need to examine their contributions to the marginalization of women of color's voices and concerns and work toward changing structures to support participation, voice, and power. At the same time, practices within Div 35 cannot silence people of color who do not fall in line with absolute solidarity along racial lines, especially when intersectional issues require solidarity against power unfairly enacted in Div 35 or in APA. Similarly, simply dismissing the views of others because they are perceived as racist shouldn't be used to end discussion. Racism may need to be part of the discussion, but should not stop a discussion from occurring. Women of color and section leaders could review their own guidelines and practices with regard to both the appeal as well as the problems of speaking in one voice. Div 35, including the women of color within it, ought to consider the westernized feminism it promotes, which supported militarism and those engaged in policies on behalf of the U.S. military. Div 35 is urged to provide trainings alone or with other groups collaboratively on how Western feminism, including anti-racist feminism, may exclude brown and black people globally. F. Uncritical solidarity for Morehead Slaughter's presidency. In our analysis, Morehead Slaughter has not gone far enough in her statements of accountability. She has said that she, quote, made mistakes and apologized if anyone has been harmed. That is, she has made global statements of accountability without apologizing directly to dissidents whose work she obstructed, without pointing a finger at any powerful men who manipulated her, without self-reflecting on her own motivations, which she continues to maintain were entirely pure and devoid of self-interest, and without describing in any detail what exactly she is accountable for. Although Hoffman and other evidence suggest she was selected to chair the Penn's task force, at least in part due to her race, and that she was likely manipulated, as well as others, by those more directly involved into taking the action she did, she does not discuss why she was willing to ignore the irregular procedures of the Penn's task force, or why she seemed to be willing to go along with what was asked of her. See Appendix Q. Appendix Q more fully documents Morehead Slaughter's actions, and we provide a few examples. At the 2007 mini-convention at APA, Morehead Slaughter could have reached out to those who were raising concerns about the Penn's task force in particular and, quote, enhanced or abusive interrogations in general. For example, she could have spoken to Arrigo, a former member of the Penn's task force and presenter at the mini-convention. Morehead Slaughter could have asked for evidence of malfeasance from Arrigo and come to her own conclusions as a result, but Morehead Slaughter failed to do so. Arrigo stated to us, quote, she, Morehead Slaughter, should confront Morgan Banks and APA and not keep apologizing but stand up to those people. Otherwise, it doesn't count. She didn't stand up to them, and she doesn't stand up to them now, end quote. In short, Morehead Slaughter defended the Penn's task force process and resulting Penn's report at all later stages, including her 2012 publication, right up to the release of the Hoffman Report. In response to these failures of feminist analysis and social justice practice, Morehead Slaughter responded saying that she, quote, couldn't have known what she didn't know. If she did not know what was really going on, then she engaged in what Hoffman refers to as, quote, willful blindness, page 67. Willful blindness may apply to several leaders in Div 35. Willful blindness is also known as a, quote, conscious avoidance and includes, quote, closing one's eyes to the high probability a fact exists. It is commonly used in courts when there is weak evidence that a criminal knew a fact so that the prosecution can ask the jury to consider whether even if the defendant did not know the fact, was this willful blindness. National Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers, 2016. In our view, the seemingly unshaken support of many in EC 35 for Morehead Slaughter's division presidency is very problematic. There appear to be multiple reasons for which Morehead Slaughter is being protected, including race. See Section E earlier. Friendship is another likely reason, given Moorhead Slaughter's work on committees within Div 35, her co-authorship with Vasquez, and her assistance provided to Henderson Daniel in campaigns for president. Some Div 35 leaders consistently defend Moorhead Slaughter. For example, some have dismissed the problem with emails, stating that it is normal for staff to write emails sent out by others, volunteers, without a discussion about what these emails contained or any other details. Also, as discussed above, there is an argument that we should not ask for Moorhead Slaughter to resign because others named in the Hoffman Report have not been asked to resign. These other people are not Div 35 leaders, and while we agree that Div 35 may also want to ask for others to resign, it will be hard to do so with Moorhead Slaughter as president. If Moorhead Slaughter were not now set on remaining in a high-status leadership position with Div 35, which may allow her to continue her trajectory to other prominent positions in APA, the support around her would be commendable, especially to the extent that support may help her process the last 10 years and reach greater self-understanding and accountability. But at this point, it is unclear why she has decided to remain in this position, and the idea that she is using the position to move forward in APA or to avoid accountability cannot be rejected. Moorhead Slaughter, in her position as Penn's Task Force Chair and co-author with Behnke, had more information available to her than the dissidents did, had she been interested in that information. Right before the Penn's task force, after reading a report of two detainees dying because of interrogations, she asked the simple questions to the members of the Penn's task force on the Penn's listserv whether she was being naive. Thereafter, to our knowledge, she has not in any email or other correspondence published in the Hoffman Report or elsewhere publicly questioned the Penn's task force report and what it was supporting. While she may have been, quote, duped, as others were, she is clearly competent and knowledgeable woman who could have pursued alternative sources of information in order to come to her own conclusions, especially in the decade following her role on the Penn's task force. Solution. We ask that Moorhead Slaughter not be allowed to use Div 35 in such a way to avoid accountability or promote herself further in APA at this time. As others have done in Div 35, we call for Moorhead Slaughter to resign. Although Div 35 bylaws do not contain specific language for removal of an officer, there are other mechanisms in the bylaws that were not explored. For example, that EC 35 can call for a membership vote on any issue of importance. G. Privileging feminist process over the substantive issues debated through feminist process. In 2011 and 2015, the idea of consensus appeared to be confused or conflated with feminist process. The long-standing idea of, quote, voice and, quote, coming to voice that privileges individual views and choices, a feminist view that has long gone out of favor in sociology, anthropology, educational theory, and philosophy, has come to represent feminism in Div 35. Rather than seeing feminist process as a set of varying ideals and an acknowledgement that it can mean different things to different people in different contexts, it is presented as rules that all implicitly understand, and these rules invoked when leadership wants to ignore the bylaws. Quote, feminist process seems in Div 35 to mostly mean, quote, inclusivity of, quote, all voices and, quote, consensus building. This is, however, a simplistic view of what feminism is, and it ignores the power relations and institutions that create, prevent, or support voice and the intersecting identities that make room for or crowd out different voices at different times. No matter the kind of feminism that is endorsed, the phrase, quote, feminist process has been used strategically by some to manipulate others on the EC 35. The bylaws appear to be evoked or ignored depending on whichever is more convenient. Consensus building gives the impression that Div 35 speaks in one voice. This has meant at times that some are silenced for the good of finding consensus, or when some prominent member makes a rousing speech against another person in the room. It ignores the fact that when there is a strong APA insider arguing one side of an argument, the voices or consensus may reflect personal or group loyalty and trust rather than principles and ethics. For example, rather than allowing disagreements about the Pence Task Force aftermath and working on how to move forward, we have been asked to focus on a fact we can all agree upon, that torture is bad. However, we argue that stating we are against torture is a pretty low bar to meet. Because the division is consensus-driven, it can move forward in its anti-torture stance, but cannot ask for structural reforms or reparations from APA or those named in the Hoffman Report, because we cannot come to consensus about whether that is the best or needed course of action. As a result, according to our analysis, there is group harmony, nobody likes torture, but very little social justice. Thus, in the end, making room for all voices does not serve feminism, even if it's a, quote, feminist process. Solutions. The lesson learned is that when there are two or more sides, and this can be anticipated, persuasive speeches by powerful individuals should not be the process by which Div 35 comes to decisions about the course of action. While Shields and colleagues developed a document in 2012, quote, process for determining the SPW's public position on social and professional issues, end quote, this process does not have the safeguards against privileging voices of power or encouraging differing opinions. We ask that this process be revised to include these safeguards and integrated into the bylaws. The division should not be asked to follow two sets of rules, the enforceable bylaws and the invisible feminist process. The Association for Women in Psychology, as well as other feminist organizations, have incorporated aspects of feminist process into their formal bylaws and regulations. Until, quote, feminist process can be clearly defined in the bylaws, we urge the division to continue use APAs and its own bylaws that outline democratic participation. H. EC 35 working without membership consultation. Members of EC 35 were not consulted about the Vasquez letter, although primarily Div 35 friends and colleagues of Vasquez appeared on it. Also, in the fall of 2015, the discussion about Moorhead Slaughter resigning was never held publicly, but only with EC 35 elected members. Solutions. Recognized leaders of Div 35 should be mindful of their connection after leaving their positions and acting under other capacities, especially with regard to implicating or exerting undue influence on Div 35. It is possible that the bylaws could explicate this. On and off, there have been communication mechanisms to reach all the members of Div 35, but there is agreement among those interviewed that they haven't been put to use since that 2012 controversy. Div 35 needs to have a way of alerting members about important controversies, providing all sides of the arguments to them, giving them an opportunity to voice their concerns and ask questions, and creating easy mechanisms for participation. 1. Disclosure of wrongdoing, whistleblowing. Martin, 2009-2013, documents many steps that organizations take in response to disclosure of wrongdoing, whether those disclosures come from internal or external sources. These responses are protect the power hierarchy at all costs, active cover-up, includes secrecy, lying, denial, and obfuscation, make demands that official channels be used, demand for only internal review to delay and tie up resources or investigation, insisting on official processes as the only way to deal with issues, taking an inordinate amount of time to determine such processes, citing internal governing documents as blocking techniques, among others. Devaluing those who disclose the problem includes name-calling, denigration, delegitimizing, blaming, and stigmatizing, reinterpreting the facts, controlling the agenda and narrative, minimizing, reframing, blocking of information flow, criticizing methods and results of investigation, and so on. Intimidation, implicit or explicit threats of bullying, lawsuits, financial loss, personal attacks, character assassination, exclusion, ostracizing, and isolation. incentives to stop the process, pleas to rejoin the fold and all will be forgiven, rewards for backing down, calls for reasonableness and respect for the organization, attempts to manipulate emotions and beliefs for higher common good or good of the group, and so on, and using the language of accidents and mistakes. Pope 2011a. We believe these strategies were used post-Pens when the dissidents were attempting to bring to light psychologists' participation in torture and in, quote, enhanced interrogations. We believe that since August of 2015, DIV35 is currently using these strategies to undermine and silence those who would disagree with the elected EC35. We are seeing examples of some of these strategies from power holders in our division because organizational power holders are likely to believe they are perfectly justified in their actions. They tend to believe that those who have exposed wrongdoing are now demanding accountability and disrespectful and disloyal, willfully failing to follow proper hierarchical channels, unintelligent or willfully ignorant of organizational, quote, realities or procedures, sometimes woefully, quote, paranoid about nothing, have character flaws, and are attacking, quote, us, framing the complaint as a personal attack to intimidate anyone who might support that side. Martin 2013, Pope 2011a. Furthermore, executives or other power holders are likely to see themselves as A, remarkably restrained in their actions, B, that this is really a threat management issue for the good of the organization, and that C, that the current corporate, quote, reality is the truth and that all other views represent either imbalance on the part of others or are flat-out deliberate lies. Furthermore, less obvious belief structures are linked to institutional conformity and groupthink, in-group versus out-group pressures, as well as maintenance of personal power networks and expectations of future organizational influence. Solutions. Martin, in 2009-2013, outlines these resistance strategies. 1. Expose what happened and continues to happen as a response to and result of exposure. Validate those willing to bring the wrongdoing to light. Organize, group together, and support each other. Interpret the wrongdoing as unjust. Keep the narrative on the facts of wrongdoing. Mobilize and avoid official channels as the, quote, last word. Work for change both internally and externally as a coherent group. And resist devaluation, intimidation, and rewards for altering course. We ask that DIV35 develop a set of good practices regarding dealing with disagreements that keeps these issues in mind. J. Friendship, nisus, and victimization. Many people on the EC35 speak of DIV35 as their home and a place in APA where they have felt safe. In some ways, this feeling of safety may have been created by having the same people stay on the EC35 for years and years, such that familiarity breeds trust. In another way, there is now a group of sections that give women of diverse identities a home within a home and an opportunity for advancement. But the recent responses to dissenting voices indicates that there may be silencing of critique within the organization, an erasure of intragroup intersectionality. There appears to be no room for positions taken by some members as a group against problematic practices within APA. In the fall of 2015 and at the midwinter meeting in New Orleans in 2016, there were many appeals for women to be nicer, not to point fingers, not to blame, and take care of each other when they brought up dissent to DIV35, continuing with business as usual, post-Hoffman. Indeed, when people who were critical of the role of DIV35 in not speaking up for the victims of torture and not standing up for feminist ideals got choked up or were teary-eyed, those who disagreed with the women would approach her to comfort her. In this way, calls for niceness seem to not be only superficial endorsements of age-old stereotypes, but a feminist ethic to go to the injured, victimized, and marginalized. This becomes problematic if women can only speak out for what they see as social justice if they do so with tears in their eyes or some other stereotypical feminist expression. On the other hand, the taking on of attitudes or speech patterns that remind women of white male power works against being heard in this context. The issue may be that women with power have not yet found a way to speak and be heard without consciously or unconsciously relying on traditional female roles, the victim, the caregiver, and modes of expression, at least in this division. This also speaks to a lack of feminist analysis of the reenactment of the gender dynamics within a division with a stated objective of feminist ideology. The emphasis on language of positivity and moving on, looking to the future, love, sisterhood, without any accountability, is a reminder of the notion of, quote, cruel optimism by Lauren Berlant, 2011. She talks about the price and who pays a price of habitual ways of thinking that focus on not dwelling on memories in the past and moving on. This is often a service for those who benefit from such optimism. Notions of niceness and pacification dictated to those whose lives are often affected by a constant violence reflect a form of cruel optimism and pathology. They may sound nice on the surface, but are aimed at silencing the oppressed, calling on them to stop being agitated, and labeling their protest as negative or violent while not focusing on the violence of conditions. Solutions. A feminist analysis of these concepts and ways of relating during conflict and welcoming of conflict and providing space for it to exist in Div 35 should be a future goal. During times of great conflict, any attempts at silencing or moderating, however positively worded, should be considered highly suspicious. A division-wide understanding should be fostered that recognizes women's and other marginalized people's struggles have not always been nice. The suffragettes, South African liberation struggle, 1970 women's movement. We are reminded of the Malvina Reynolds song, 1974 song, Isn't It Nice, whose lyrics state, quote, there are nicer ways to do it, but the nice ways always fail. Conflicts of interest within the division. Section K. Conflicts of interest have rarely been examined within Div 35. It is of interest to note that Vasquez and Moorhead Slaughter are co-authors on an article on boundary issues and multiple relationships. This relationship left undisclosed in EC 35 meetings when Vasquez stood to defend Moorhead Slaughter's presidency. Moorhead Slaughter was one of the managers of Henderson Daniels' campaign for presidency. The assumption may be that these experiences of working together do not present conflicts of interest, and this may be true. However, Div 35 has yet to explore what does constitute a conflict of interest in a tight-knit group. Another problem with Div 35 that several people interviewed alluded to is that individuals appear to be using Div 35 as a stepping stone to other higher positions within APA. This does not serve Div 35 well if Div 35 is to promote feminist psychology rather than women, a distinction that must be made clear. When APA insiders or those who hope to be in leadership roles for APA proper lead Div 35, there are too many conflicts of interest. If Div 35 is to be a place in which members are out against injustices, there needs to be the freedom to disagree with APA proper. If Div 35 leaders are looking to advance their careers by obtaining leadership positions in APA, they might be unwilling to lead Div 35 in disagreements with APA. Solutions. Bylaw changes could assert that presidents and members of the voting EC 35 should not hold multiple offices positions in APA. There could be term limits on EC 35 and extended EC, as well as limits on how many positions one person can have in a specified number of years. There could be formalized ways of sharing power through collaboration with AWP, including a member at large on voting EC 35, creating bylaws that define feminist process rather than use, quote, feminist process as a way of circumventing the bylaws, clarifying the mission in terms of social justice issues and the meaning and purpose of a feminist focus, and creating a committee to understand and create policy around conflicts of interest within Div 35. We suggest here that one of the reasons that individuals in Div 35 want to remain on the EC is not simply for reasons of advancement and power. It may be that given the lack of communication with an opportunity to broadly involve regular members, being on the EC is the only way to contribute to the division and feel connected to this group. To this end, we recommend greater outreach and involvement of members. Finally, we recommend a thorough analysis of the term, quote, conflict of interest, and that in correcting its own problems of conflicts of interest, Div 35 put forth a model for the rest of APA. Section 6, Summary Recommendations. To demonstrate responsibility and responsiveness, Div 35 must refrain from common bureaucratic power over responses designed to block accountability measures from being enacted. In this spirit, we offer the MITF report and present the following steps to take. Truth-telling. Support the MITF report, making reasonable corrections of factual errors after the first draft. Accept the MITF report as an official document of Div 35. Keep open all its data banks, membership lists, listserv archives, EC 35 minutes, and so on, to any evidence collectors. Include all members in discussion of the MITF and Hoffman reports. Changes within the division. Take an active lead in the ethical reformation of APA post-Hoffman, incorporating the lessons learned in our own division, models of accountability from our leadership, and the support of new voices from our division who will bring feminism to bear on committees to help APA to move forward in the most ethical way possible, devoid of the conflicts of interest and no longer blind to the effects of APA decisions on global communities. Repair our position and image as a social justice division of APA by drafting a formal apology for our collective failures to resist APA collusion in, quote, enhanced interrogations, abuses of people of color in Gitmo, Abu Ghraib, and the CIA black sites. Study conflicts of interest, COI, and become competent in identifying COI situations that involve gains in professional reputation and career building. Enact COI bylaws in Div 35 as a model for APA. Actions should be taken to reduce cultivation of Div 35, quote, insiders. To this end, create changes in election and appointment to EC to increase transparency and prevent the same people from being moved around to different committees, effectively crowding out new opinions and new participation to guard against division shopping and to ensure that those who are assuming leadership positions do not have current conflicts of interest, having served recently or consecutively as leaders in other divisions. There should be limits on service on the full EC, and appointments to committees should always follow a call to the full membership, with new members being chosen to serve over those who have already served. Create space for members to learn more about those running for elected office within the division. Future candidates should provide a list of other division and APA positions held, including an analysis of potential conflicts of interest. Members should be given the opportunity to ask questions of candidates and should be encouraged to be more involved in the election process. Further, policies should be considered to avoid candidates running unopposed and efforts to reduce power pipelines where a list and order of future leaders is informally selected or developed behind the scenes. Create an inclusive task force to better understand the history of racism in the division, the dynamics of racism, and intersectionality as it has affected Div 35, and do this with the end of rebuilding cooperation and trust among all members. Find ways to safeguard against the cult of niceness and the suppression of dissension or angry voices. That is, create a culture where dissent is valued and space for disagreement is created. Develop a better communication system so that all members may feel encouraged to participate in important ethical discussions and provide at least one unmonitored or loosely monitored outlet for such communications. devise safeguards against silencing voices of members when issues of race and ethnicity arise, such that a policy of, quote, falling in line or, quote, solidarity is not automatically assumed as necessary or effective with regard to overarching ethical goals. A member should not have to choose between section support, the support of powerful women in one section, and her own ethics. Create procedures and policies for the consideration of issues that safeguard against decisions based on friendship, admiration, and trust, rather than consideration of facts and all sides of an issue. Create public speaking guidelines for former and current DIV 35 leaders to apply to future public speaking to guard against their voices being interpreted as the voice of DIV 35. Create educational opportunities around ethics aimed at building activists unimpeded by calls for, quote, niceness, and able to check their own self-interest against the interest of others. Create a series of feminism workshops required of those who run for higher office in DIV 35 on feminism in the 21st century, intersectionality, and global feminism with a focus on a teaching about imperialism and colonialism. Redefine and or recommit a definition of feminism that goes beyond, quote, girl power, advancing women leaders in the pipeline and supporting women no matter their positions. Reparations to those outside of the division and inside of the division. Make reparations to those whom we have harmed by our silence, ignorance, and complicity with power. This may be accomplished initially through a fund for detainee survivors or the families of those who perished under interrogation abuse. Acknowledge how our failure to consider the evidence and how our silencing behaviors could have caused harm to the career trajectories and/or personal professional lives of those dissidents who devoted thousands of hours to the work of exposing APA collusion with the torture program. A clear and principled anti-war, anti-imperialist, and anti-racist feminist power analysis should be developed to guide within DIV 35 from lending any support to U.S. militarism. In the name of feminism, transparency, and reflection, a detailed accounting from our past leaders would be helpful, not necessarily immediately, but in time, when they feel ready to make themselves vulnerable with regard to direct action, obstruction of protests, or passivity. With regard to conflicts of interest, we have articulated why the current president-elect, Olivia Moorhead Slaughter, should not continue in her current office. Our report and the Hoffman Report both document substantial involvement in obstructing the dissidents and collaboration with Benki to delay votes, undermining membership, delaying the publication of the casebook, and more. She continued to benefit from these acts up through her 2012 publication with Benki supporting the PENS process, presentations on PENS in 2015, and through her election in DIV 35. EC 35 should formally and publicly ask Dr. Moorhead Slaughter to step down as president-elect, whether or not the bylaws or constitution can enforce this request. In conclusion, we assert that when everyone is responsible, nobody is responsible. While APA staff members have been removed from office, most notably Benki, to our knowledge, there have been no APA members who served in leadership positions that have been asked for statements of accountability, nor asked to make reparations. Each division seems to have been left on its own by APA to decide how to relate to those members and those executive committees directly involved in the PENS process and aftermath, including the current and continuing cover-up, denials, and downplaying of issues, or to those who took action that, in the end, supported abuses. In order to respond to the widespread manipulation, corruption, and conflicts of interest documented in the Hoffman Report, we strongly believe that APA members who were directly or even indirectly involved in these actions should not be contributing to the efforts to correct course. Nevertheless, APA and individual divisions continue to appoint and elect these individuals to prominent positions. DIV 35, as a feminist organization, has a greater responsibility to pressure APA to hold its leaders more accountable for their role in PENS and post-PENS events. We cannot do that with good conscience until we examine our own division's role And we cannot do that when we support, at our home, one of the leaders who is unlikely to be perceived as a credible critic of APA when asserting feminist principles towards social justice. We humbly submit this report to Div 35, cognizant that it is incomplete given who we were able to interview, the limited time we had to work on it, the non-existent funding, and our own limitations as a group. We offer this report in hopes of not only moving forward, but in changing business as usual in our division and in APA. The history of feminism shows many splits in coming together to support our shared values of inclusivity, justice, and care. May this report bring us back together, if not now, in the near future. Finally, with regard to those who were tortured and abused because of our passivity, the focus must change to be on them. It takes moral courage to move out of the role of bystander. We must be alert to harmful trends and ready to step out of our comfort and safety zones in order to take action to protect the welfare of others when psychologists inflict cruel, inhumane, or degrading treatment. Pope 2015. And we must be especially alert to people and populations who may be more vulnerable due to their race, ethnicity, income level, status, and religion. We would like to see APA move forward in making reparations to the victims and hope Div 35's leadership supports taking action toward this end. Quote, "It is very tempting to take the side of the perpetrator. All the perpetrator asks is the bystander do nothing. He appeals to the universal desire to see, hear, and speak no evil. The victim, on the contrary, asks the bystander to share the burden of pain. The victim demands action, engagement, and remembering." Judith Herman. Quote, "I picture calling in as a practice of pulling folks back in who have strayed from us. It means extending to ourselves the reality that we will and do fuck up. We stray, and there will always be a chance for us to return. Calling in as a practice of loving each other enough to allow each other to make mistakes, a practice of loving ourselves enough to know that what we're trying to do here is radical unlearning of everything we have ever been configured to believe is normal." Nolun Tran on blog blackgirldangerous.org. Quote, "It's a feminism that trains on themes of sisterhood and support. You go girl tweets and Instagram photos, cheery magazine editorials about dressing to please yourself." Andy Zeisler on the new feminism. Quote, "It's a sad commentary on APA culture, on how people fight to be a victim and how successful a strategy that has been in terms of avoiding the issues." Stephen Saltz. Quote, "Many of us do it each year with our New Year's resolutions, saying with it over the long haul is the hard part. The Hoffman Report led APA to resolve to reset its, quote, moral compass, to use the words of the APA president cited earlier, and to take initial steps. It faces the hard work of staying with it, of not lumping the Hoffman Report with over a decade's work of prior investigative reports, books, and articles about APA interrogations and torture that it had denied, discounted, discredited, and dismissed. Of not leaving its new policy on interrogations to languish with the 2008 interrogation policy and the various torture policies, with unanswered questions about the willingness to enforce them or whether they are enforceable, of changing the institutional culture, character, and dynamics that gave rise to this controversy. TRICKET 2015, among others, has highlighted the tendency not only to identify the source of the problems in their most peripheral aspects, but also to overlook hidden barriers that prevent change. Kenneth Pope. Quote, "Indication of harm, not proof of harm, is our call to action." Mural painted by B. Sargent, Church Street, Cambridge, Mass., United States of America. Quote, "When morality comes up against profit, it is rarely that profit loses." Shirley Chisholm. References are available. I will pick up reading the appendices in the next issue. I want to thank you for tuning in, and till next time, talk with you soon.